Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Robbins, even though you may not be able to tell today considering I'm losing my voice, but we are going to roll with it. I am the founder and managing director here at the Anthony Michael Group, where we build high-performing teams and careers across the U.S. MedTech and greater life sciences industry, areas like regulatory affairs, quality. On the commercial side, we do market access and reimbursement, et cetera. And today, like all the other shows, I have the pleasure of hosting somebody that I have a lot of respect for. We're talking with Miss Jennifer Mascioli-Tudor, the founder and principal consultant at JMT Compliance. Jennifer comes to the show today with over 23 years experience in medtech, regulatory, and quality. She's worked for a variety of organizations in a variety of capacities, from large strategics like J&J and Medtronic to small and mid-sized companies like Outset Medical and American Medical Systems, for example. She's currently an instructor at UC San Diego and simultaneously is running her consulting practice, like I said, JMT Compliance Consulting, where she's focused on helping organizations navigate the quality and regulatory landscape, providing coaching, mentoring, and foundational business support. Where appropriate, she also provides fractional support in capacities like COO and Chief Quality and Regulatory Officer to support growing businesses. Jennifer holds her Bachelor's of Science degree in Physiology, Chemistry, and French from Eastern Michigan University and her MBA from the University of Phoenix. So without further ado, Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mitch. Wow. Thank you for the introduction. I appreciate it.
You got it. Like I said, we've known each other for a while. I've got the utmost respect for you. And I'm so excited because today we're going to be talking about something that we've touched on briefly in past episodes, but we really haven't gone as deep as we're hopefully going to go today. And that is the fact that I just mentioned in the introduction, you've got over two decades of experience in the industry. You've worked for a variety of companies, but here you are on your own, blazing a trail and really building your own consulting practice. And that's really what I want to dig into with you today, this transition that you've made and how it's going and all good stuff. So I guess to get started, why did you decide to do this? Why did you decide to open up shop for yourself?
I've always had this entrepreneurial vein and really just looked at innovators and entrepreneurs and thought to myself, you know, there's something to be said about being able to offer services to small startup organizations and trying to navigate this evolving regulatory landscape. And we know right now with FDA specifically, we're just constantly getting hit with new regulations, new guidance documents that we have to adhere to. And if you're a big conglomerate, you know, you have infrastructure to support that. When you're small, it's a lot harder. So as I sort of looked in the rearview mirror and thought to myself, you know, I have 20 plus years of experience. There's a real opportunity to take all of that learning and really just cater to small emerging growth medtech companies. I live in the Bay Area. And so there's just a lot of activity happening here with respect to innovation and new technology. And I thought, if I'm not going to do it, like if I'm going to do it, now's the time to do it, just because of where we are in the space. So that for me was the genesis. And then, you know, getting to where I am, it's something that I've always wanted to do, like I said.
That's awesome. So I'm going into almost 9 years running my own business. This started in the fall of 2015. And I remember at the time before doing this, I fretted about it. I was like, should I do it? Should I not do it? Do we have enough cash reserves in case I don't bring in business right away?
Right.
And then I made the jump. I turned in my notice. I made the jump. And I remember starting in my basement and thinking, and at the time, you know, the name of my company is the Anthony Michael Group, is because my son was born, Anthony Michael, on July 4th, 2015. I started the business in like October of that year. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, what did I do? Like, I have a family to support. And it wasn't like things were not going well where I was. Like, I had that kind of moment of terror. And I, instead of like just being paralyzed, I tried to use that fear as much as I could to be a catalyst for trying to get things going as fast as possible. What was it like for you emotionally when you made that decision? Like, okay, I'm in, I'm doing this.
So to be clear, I'm a quality and regulatory person. That's what I've been doing. I'm a science person. I'm very process oriented. I'm very methodical. But I also knew that in order to make this work, you need to have sort of a marketing lens. You need to look at this through a marketing lens. So immediately as I started thinking through what does the first 30 days look like when you go out on your own, you can either really sort of seize the moment and make a big splash, or you can sort of introduce yourself very carefully. And so I opted for the first. I met with a really amazing designer and she helped me sort of put some pen to paper in terms of, okay, here are some things that we need to think about from a branding perspective. So for example, your name, right? Similar to you, it took me a number of tries to figure out how I wanted to name it. You know, first I started with something what I would consider splashy, but really fundamentally what it boiled down to is how do you recognize that person? If you're going into consulting, you need some sort of hook. And so JMT is what I'm known by. So it just seemed natural to go with that. And then the website, one of the things I really felt strongly about is if we're going to brand, I really want to make sure that if someone, you know, looks me up on LinkedIn and then goes to my website, that there's something special about the look and feel, that it's not just piecemeal together, that when you get to the website, you get an idea of who I am, the caliber of work that I potentially could provide, and just sort of the creativity that goes along with being a consultant, because you really can't sort of, you know, operate within, I guess, lines. You have to be able to be nimble because you're dealing with different technologies, you're dealing with different executives. And so those were really important starting points for me, was to really think about first who I wanted to be sort of now in this new space of consulting. And then when someone lands on my page, how do I want that person to kind of see that branding? So those are all really important considerations for me.
What's been so how long has it been now that you've had your practice?
Going on 8 months.
Okay. So what's been the best part so far?
Well, I love how dynamic it is. So just being able to meet with different organizations, I get to learn different products, I get to see different quality management systems, I get to think about different regulatory and quality strategies. It's just, you know, I was telling someone earlier today, literally, it's like every day you're putting on a different hat and you're just being exposed to so many different opportunities that for me, like it keeps like the brain really fresh. So that was the biggest, I think, maybe aha, like I actually might want to do this more long term than maybe just a bridge.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is the flexibility. You know, you have this amazing flexibility. Obviously you want projects, but you can, if you're good at project managing, which I think if anyone's considering moving into consulting, you really have to be good with your time. And you can probably attest to this, but you really need to be good with your time. But if you're good with your time, you can plan for things like, gosh, I took a vacation this year. Who thought, you know? So little moments like that, like I can, you know, go watch my daughter play soccer, or, you know, there's just so much opportunity to get your time back, which to me is the greatest gift in the consulting world.
That's interesting. And I get that because you've got flexibility where, you know, you set kind of how much you're taking on and the hours that you're putting in, and you might be able to work on a client's project in the middle of the night if you need to,
yep.
If it works for your schedule. Whereas in the corporate world, you've obviously got other stakeholders that are demanding of your time at a certain time. So I get that for sure. You know, I think it's never been easier perhaps to say, I'm going to go into this, I'm going to do my consulting, because there's so much need and demand for contract help right now. And it's not only contract help, but there's fractional leadership, like you said.
Yeah.
There's true consulting where a team's got a full staff, but they need a strategy partner, whatever it may be. However, I think that it's really important for us today to talk about the downsides and the things that people need to be prepared for.
Yes.
Because it can look glamorous and it can look like, oh, I could do this. I could get an LLC and set up a website and tell people I'm available for consulting. But let's talk about the other piece that I don't think people are really taking into account a lot of times. So I want to start with a very straightforward, simple question. In the last 8 months, what's been the most challenging piece for you?
The challenging piece is really having that conversation with yourself to know that this is not a predictable job. So like he said, sort of at the beginning, when you're working a 9-to-5 job, you know where the money's coming from. You know how much vacation you have. You have certainty around benefits. And so if you're the primary breadwinner, if you're the one that's bringing in benefits, those are all things that are just core to being in a corporate job. So when you move into consulting, you lose all of that, right? You need to start thinking about, okay, I might not have a project tomorrow. How am I going to, you know, pound the pavement to make sure I have some certainty around revenue coming in, let's say next month? So the hardest part, especially, and I'm just going to claim that I'm a recovering type A personality. So I love control. I love to be able to sort of predict the future, even though, you know, you don't actually get to do that. So when you move into consulting, it literally is every day is a new challenge, whether it's clients calling you ad hoc to ask you for advice, you not knowing where the next project's going to come. So you're tapping into your network. So there's just, you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable when you're in a consultant role.
I think that's an understatement.
Yeah, for sure.
It's an understatement. And here's the other caveat too, is a lot of regulatory and quality people are not as extroverted as you are. Maybe you're not extroverted, but you certainly present yourself as extroverted.
Yeah.
So let me stop. Would you classify yourself that way?
So funny. I am an introvert, believe it or not, because again, you know, I'm a very systematic, process oriented. I like to have structure, so I'm introverted. But what I found is when I'm talking about my business and when I'm talking about what I can help you solve for, I become extroverted because I have just passion around it. I truly am maybe one of the most passionate quality people you've met, maybe on the side, the most passionate regulatory, but I truly love what I do. So to be able to go in and articulate, like, here's what I can do for you, especially what I found is startup teams, they just don't even know where to start. So to be able to come in and sort of calm people down and say, this is absolutely doable. We can do it within sort of a framework that works for your budget. All of that just makes a world of sense. So anyway, that's...
Because I was going to say the caveat is a lot of folks in this space, they are introverted and it goes very well with what the types of roles that they're in, right? However, if you're really going to do this, you have to put on a business development hat. There's no ifs, ands,
you
or
do.
Buts. Because here's the thing, even if you can say you have a big network and a lot of people trust you and you have a really good name, that work dries up at some point. It may not be tomorrow. It may not be 6 months from now. It's going to dry up at some point. And so if you're not comfortable or able to get out there and generate business or generate interest or be able to articulate somebody's pain point in a way that they're not able to even do themselves, it's going to be really, really tough. And so one of the things that I applaud you for is you're everywhere. You're everywhere. If you go on, you are, if you go, and that's the whole, that's everybody's goal, is to be omnipresent. So if you go on LinkedIn, for example, you are on your guests on people's shows, you're putting out your own content, you're starting this career catalyst thing for the last few months that we're going to talk about. And you're really trying to be out there with value. And that's the other piece that I want people to understand. And maybe you can speak to this too, is it's one thing to go and knock on somebody's door and say, hey, I'm an expert. I can do this for you. It's another thing to say it without saying it. So how much value can you put out and speak to somebody's pain points and give a lot online to where people are like, wow, if she's giving this away, what is she charging for? Like, what are the pieces that she's charging for? And you build that intrigue, right? And I think you're doing a really good job about that. Do you want to talk to that a little bit as far as your online presence and kind of your thoughts behind that piece?
So I think to me, you know, it wasn't really a strategy, I will say. You know, like I mentioned earlier, the whole branding was really important to me. Again, how people see you if they don't know you makes all the difference, right? And you can tap your network, but at the end of the day, you are going to have inorganic growth. I mean, that's just a part of continuing your business. The other thing I might advise people to is get to know your marketing people. If you're within an organization that has a strong marketing group, really get to know them, because I've learned just so much just being sort of an observer with marketing strategy, with, you know, go-to-market strategy, launch strategy. How do we think about branding? How do we think about websites, social media? You know, I just was very curious about that. So I was always asking questions, and that just helped when I started thinking about my own brand. How did I want to sort of pursue it? But in terms of online presence, you know, for me, it's around, where do I see gaps? So Career Catalyst, right? Career Catalyst for me came about in a way that was, I started talking with people who had recently been laid off, like unexpectedly, right? Because of downsizing, because of cost reduction, what have you. And these are people that are extremely talented. Like, you would not expect that these were the people that would be out in the workforce looking for work. And so it just really occurred to me that there's this community of people who are a bit lost right now, who just need support. They need community. They need a place to go and articulate the fears and have questions and all this good stuff. And so that really what was the genesis of the Career Catalyst Circle, is how do I now bring this group of people together, have really candid, transparent conversations, and just facilitate this growth around community. I didn't think of it in terms of branding. I thought about it in terms of community. And because of that initial thought, now it's actually, there's some groundswell around it. There's some interest, because there are people that really are curious and have a need to build this community. So I don't know if that answers your question, but to me, it really is around, what gaps am I trying to solve for? Mm-hmm. And the other thing, to your point, is I really don't want to be the consultant. And there are some phenomenal, I mean, we both know some phenomenal quality and regulatory people that push amazing technical content. I love that they do that. I don't want to oversaturate social media with more of it, right? So I want to take a different approach and really applaud, celebrate, support all of the people that do the technical, and then focus on other things for myself so that there was a bit of a differentiator.
Yep. And I think the takeaway from what you're saying here is there's a place for everybody. And there's, yeah. I mean, it's a big market and there's plenty of networking and business to go around, but it's more so like, okay, if you're going to carve a sliver for yourself, what are the core differentiators, right?
Yep.
And if XYZ is doing this and they're doing that, and we're all trying to serve the same marketplace, how do I fit in? What do I want my brand to represent? What are my core differentiators? And what is my value proposition to the same market? The thing I love about the Career Catalyst piece the most is that you did this out of genuine, like, this is a gap. I want to do something about it and we're going to do it. And you didn't ask for business. You're not asking for eyes on it, but you genuinely tried to set up a community that is now taking off and getting a lot of traction.
Yeah.
But because of that, you're building your brand as an indirect result. And all you're trying to do is help people. So I really think that sometimes people overlook the importance of or the power behind trying to just genuinely add value. And usually what goes around comes around in one way, shape, or form. It just does.
Yeah, I mean, that truly, authentically was only to build community. And, you know, the other thing that was really amazing to me. So I started out Career Catalyst just telling my story, right? So that was the first session that we had a couple months ago. And then I started to think to myself, well, I can't just tell my story every month. I need to bring in keynote speakers who can share their story and really be a resource for people. And so what really impressed me or amazed me is I reached out to a number of people, and I've talked to you about this. I bring people in who inspire me, people who I've watched their story, I followed their story. They just do wonderful things in the community. And I asked a lot of different people from different backgrounds if they would come in and be part of the Career Catalyst Circle session. And not one person said no. Not one person. I mean, we're talking about CEOs, diversity and inclusion leaders. I mean, you name it. And I have, you know, pretty much 2024 booked out. And I just think to myself, that just validates that people are really looking to build this community because they're making the time to do it. And by the way, we're not charging. So there's no cost exchange, money exchange. It's all in the spirit of getting together. So I just thought I would share that because that really impressed me.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Who is consulting not for? What advice now 8 months into this would you give? We've talked about the business development aspect and the importance of, you know, having to have the thick skin to knock on doors in one way, shape, or form and really build up business. But what other nuggets do you have over the last 8 months to where you could say, hey, if you are XYZ, this is not for you?
So here's the thing. If you do not do well with rejection, stay at your job. Because I think, you know, I'll never forget when I was working for the startup, one of the things that the CEO said, it just really stuck with me, is she always said, do you know how many no's I had to hear when I was fundraising to get to my yes? I mean, just the number of people that, you know, she went to and she talked with, and she just, to me, it was such a humbling comment because, you know, she knew she had to go through rejection, but she also knew that there was going to be someone who believed in sort of the cause and the mission and said yes. And so I feel the same way about consulting. You will get a lot of no's. You will get a lot of people who reach out and are super enthusiastic and are so excited to work with you. You put together a project proposal and you never hear from them again. You know, I just knew coming into this that would happen because, I mean, I think that's just the nature of the business and you just have to be okay with it. And you have to keep putting one foot in front of the other. You have to think about the next day. You have to reach out to the other contact and you just have to keep going. Because otherwise, if you get stuck in the no's, you will not ever get your yes. That's how I feel about it. So I think that's an important consideration. These are not easy roles. Probably one of the hardest roles I've had, but also the most liberating, empowering, you know, put in any adjective. And that's how I feel about consulting.
100%. I mean, you're a business owner, you're running a business. And so I think that's the piece. And I know we're kind of focusing a lot on the downsides, but there's just so many people out there who I feel like are like, why don't I just do this? They're billing X amount of dollars an hour and I'm making that I could work half the time and make the same money. Why don't I just do this? And I really, really, really want people to be aware that that's all well and good. And yes, you kind of see the upside, but the downside is, like you just said, I put together a proposal, they never even got back to me.
Right.
Another company, they used a different consultant when I thought they were going to go with me. Another company, they don't want to pay my fee because I'm charging too much. Another company says, get back to me in 6 months. And it's like, okay, well, how do I feed my family tomorrow? And so it's really, really important to understand that while there is a ton of demand out there, also a lot of consultants who have been entrenched in this business for quite some time, they have a reputation. They yep. already have established business. There's big companies out there that have a ton of yep. consultants on staff that you're competing
yes.
with. So there's a lot. Okay, so that's the downside. The upside is you are a bright example of if you really truly believe in what you do and you have a pedigree that validates and it provides credibility to what you can offer, then naturally there are going to be people out there who want to leverage your services and find value in what you're doing. But mm-hmm. you've got to be able to stomach the ups and downs. And that's the piece that I'm just trying to be super clear about for people.
And it's such like, I need to underscore that because if you really, so for me, because I worked at a startup, because I've been in executive leadership positions, I've managed large and small teams, you just learn how to deal with stress and you learn how to deal with ambiguity and change, all of that stuff. So for me, once I made the decision, the change management curve was decision, I'm there. Right. Versus other people, it takes a while to sort of clip along the change management curve. But I just strongly encourage anyone who's thinking about this, really put your pros and cons, right? Family, financial benefits, you know, health benefits, all those things are key factors. And like you said at the beginning, you know, make sure you have a bit of reserve because you are going to have some reserve to bridge the gap for some of those months where you might not quite make all of the money you need to sort of pay your bills, just make sure you have some reserve. But if you're okay with all that uncertainty and risk, then the upside I think is wonderful. Like I said, I'm just 8 months in. I'm still building my project portfolio. I'm still really trying to figure out who I want to be in this space. But I think at the end of the day, it's an evolution, but I was pretty grounded when I started. So really now it's just about, you know, pivoting and adapting to the different scenarios as I go through this.
One other piece I want to call out that I'm curious about your opinion on is when you work for a corporation, whether it's a small startup or it's a large entity, you have a team in one way, shape, or form. You've either got yeah. colleagues, you've got your own team, whatever it is, there's people around you. Here you are, you're a one-man band right now. And yes, you've got interaction on LinkedIn and you've got other colleagues that you can talk to. But how has that been for you as far as like working with teams every day to then going to work solo?
You know, the transition hasn't been super hard for me because I'm introverted. So when I'm on the calls or when I am meeting clients at sites,
yeah,
I'm on.
It's enough
right?
for you.
It's enough. Like
yeah.
I get enough sort of, you know, replenishment on the extroverted side. And then I can, like, for instance, I was talking to someone today and they were talking about their schedule and they were like, well, we have a one-on-one on Monday, then we have a team meeting on that. And they just went through their, and in my head, I'm like, no. So that's the other advantage
yep.
too is, you know, you're not on all of these ancillary calls because you're your own person in your own entity and the client's not going to invite you to frivolous meetings because guess what? You get to charge for it. So they're going to be extremely careful with respect to when and how much they include you, which actually gives you time back. So
That's awesome. Well, tell us more if you would. So what should people know about your consulting practice other than what I said at the beginning? What types
yeah.
of projects are you really excited about helping with? And at what point in the game are people usually, you know, enlisting your help as of late?
I have all sort of like the ends of the spectrum with respect to client portfolio, size, so on and so forth. But what I love to do, so I do wing-to-wing quality. So like I mentioned, I've done regulatory. I typically, though, on the regulatory side, I'll work with organizations to do regulatory strategy. We'll map on product classification, things like that. So I can do a lot of sort of the upfront work. When it comes to submissions, I know really good consultants that are really good at that. And that's the other thing, too, just quickly, is as a consultant, you have to be honest with yourself and you have to be able to really discern what are you really good at and what do you really need to outsource? Because the last thing that you want to do from a branding perspective is go in and sell that you can do something that maybe you haven't done before, because there is no cushion. If you don't get it right, you know, that information goes quickly. So just be extremely honest with yourself with respect to what can you really do well and what do you need to outsource. And so on that point, quality is my passion. I do wing-to-wing quality. So I help build quality management systems. I sit on design teams. I build risk management plans and files. I mean, anything that you would think sits under quality, I can help support. with QMSR, obviously that's a key topic for our industry. So helping organizations get ready for 2026 certainly is something that I'm also focused on as well.
Very cool. Well, listen, it's such a pleasure having you on the show. I know this was a long time coming. I've got the utmost respect for you. I think I've said it three times, but I really do. Wishing you nothing but continued success. And if it's okay with you, in the show notes, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile and a link to your JMT compliance website.
That would be great. And maybe I could just leave, you know, the listeners with this. One of the things that you mentioned is community. So what I've really been inspired by is community. So you and I have connected. We've had some really great conversations. You have supported me through this transition. You don't have to support me, but you have. And I think that that's one of the things with the power of building community. So don't be shy to be vulnerable. Don't be shy to click the connect on LinkedIn, even if you don't know them. You have no idea where that connection will bring you to. And what I found is I get more yeses than I get nos when it comes to connecting. And that to me is just so inspiring. So I just want to share that with you because A, thank you for supporting and always being a champion for not only myself, but for the rest of the industry. But just again, be vulnerable, you know, take a risk, you know, reach out to somebody who maybe you've been watching and make that connection.
Love it. Love it. Well, thanks so much. And again, thanks for being here today and for all the nuggets. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.